Hello. We have in recent weeks seen a number of weighty reports and studies and indeed conferences from ONFIF on the subject of central bank digital currency. And it seems that one or more major CBDCs are on the way. And there's been an awful lot of discussion about how you might regulate them, about what the technical standards might be, about the features of an eventual currency. But one thing that's been fairly short in this discussion has been a consideration of the consumer, of the retail users of cash or central bank money, and how we might react to a central bank issuing a digital currency, because we feel we already have one in the shape of commercial bank money in our credit and debit cards. And very little talks about how central banks might go about not only convincing us to use this new product, but to introduce it. And I think it's probably true to say central banks are not renowned for their expertise in the marketing of fast-moving consumer goods. And therefore, I'm very glad to have with me today a man who is an expert in the marketing of fast-moving financial services, Tim Jones, a gentleman with an illustrious career, chief exec at one stage of NatWest Retail Bank, one of the progenitors of Mondex, a digital payment system which was arguably 20 years ahead of its time, or arguably a technology in search of an application if you talk to others, and more recently, the developer of Tibado, an answer to digital central bank money questions. And Tim's been developing some very interesting thoughts based on his extensive experience about some of the barriers to getting us as consumers to accepting digital currency and some of the things that central banks might want to consider. And I think we can safely say that at the moment, central banks are not going to win any awards for consumer marketing. So over to you, Tim. Tell us a bit more about this.
Well, thanks, Bill, and thank you very much for the opportunity to contribute to this important debate. It's not often that you have a chance or even the challenge of competing with a product that is central to the everyday running of societies all over the world for a period of over 2,000 years. That's what cash is. Whether it's been in the form of cowrie shells, through metal coins, through paper notes, through cotton-infused paper notes, through to plastic notes, cash has been with us for a very, very long time. It's been so much part of the furniture that we take it for granted. And the evolution of it as a product has been very slow. It was just the cowrie shells. Then it was just the coins. Then the notes were added to the coins. But each of these steps was hundreds of years in the making. And then the evolution of the coins, the notes, has been hundreds and hundreds of years in the making to where we are today. And if we go back to a period just after the Second World War, let's say take 1946, 1947, all spontaneous retail payments around the world were made with cash or checks. And the percentage of total payments, spontaneous payments, when you went into a shop to buy something that were made with cash would have been in the late 90s%. It only was when you went in to buy something of greater value that you went with your checkbook. So cash was the dominant global choice for buying things in shops. In every society. But then one fateful day, a gentleman in New York forgot his wallet and decided he'd form a diner's club so that he wouldn't be embarrassed in the restaurant the next time he forgot his wallet. And the payment card industry was born. And to today, where we have ubiquitous bank accounts and or account-like structures such as M-Pesa or Alipay or PayPal and their equivalents, so that everybody has some form of bank account. Many people actually have a bank account But if they don't have a bank account, they have something along the PayPal lines that functionally acts in a similar manner. And the market share of cash has collapsed. It's quite variable around the world. So you go to Sweden to see it collapse arguably the most. And you go to Germany, not that far away, to see cash still being very prominent. But generally, the market share of cash has collapsed. And one of the themes of change has been digitization and the introduction of various forms of electronic payments. The cards have gone electronic with things like Apple Pay. And the checks have gone electronic with interbank transfers. So everything's gone electronic except cash. And so cash now finds itself in a position where people have taken its lunch. People have stolen its lunch, whether it's debit card payments, tap and go in the pub, or whether it's Alipay, PayPal payments for buying online. Things that the functional equivalents would obviously have been cash in 1946 are now mediated in a different way. And that's a bit of a challenge. So let's go to Sweden. You had about 98% market share of cash in spontaneous payments in 1946. Now it's less than 7%. And those folks that have the 93 aren't going to give up willingly. So here you are as a central banker. You've allowed your market share to drop from 97 to 3. You're now contemplating issuing a central bank digital currency. And this is a very, very harsh and competitive market that you're seeking to join. And doubtless you want your product to succeed. You may make all sorts of noises about working in harmony with the private sector, but don't be fooled. If your product is to succeed, you're going to take volume from those incumbent private sector actors. It's inevitable. And so they're not going to welcome you. That's not the way capitalist markets work. You're not going to be welcomed into this market. So how are you going to do this? Well, yes, there are a number of very important policy issues, and there's no need to rehearse them here. They've dominated, as Phil, you've just set out, the debate over the last decade around CBDC. But at its root, this is one of the most daunting, challenging, yet exciting new product developments there's ever been. You don't often get to take forward a product that's 2,000 years old, that's been so ubiquitous and remains for many people around the world so ubiquitous in every part of their life. So what you would therefore do, wouldn't you, is that you would hire the very best new product development experts, consultants, executives that you possibly could. And you would go through the processes of new product development to understand, firstly, what your customer value proposition is. That's what you do. You build a customer value proposition. You then test it with different sorts of potential users, consumers, children, old people, small businesses, bigger businesses. You go through the gamut of the user types that would be using your new product, and you'd refine through that process of customer value proposition development and qualitative research what the proposition was. You'd then take that into quantitative market research, where you would basically see how successful this product was likely to be, if there were pricing elements, how would that work, etc., etc. And then you would start to do trials and tests, and you'd learn from them, and you'd gradually get confident enough to launch.
Well, very classic Kotler and marketing, goes back to my MBAs, you know, the five P's of marketing. But I've now got a great advantage as a central bank in that my product is a fiat product, i.e. you do what I tell you to do, and one of my public duties as a central bank is to provide a stable means of payment to my domestic economy. And if I persuade enough people, it'll be acceptable elsewhere as well. But essentially, I'm providing stable payment. And because that stable payment can be accepted for payment of taxes and other requirements in the economy, can I not simply say, well, you know, this is it. Yes, the world's moved on because of COVID and printing costs. We're getting rid of those uncomfortable bits of paper. And now you've got an electronic pound or an electronic euro. Off we go. Why do I need to treat it like a soap powder?
So I think the phrase "treat it like a soap powder" is incredibly telling, Phil. It talks to an arrogance, a pejorative tonality that dismisses marketing as fluff and nonsense. It isn't. It's the root of successful capitalism. You build products that customers want. And in this day, you have a more discerning set of customers than has ever been the case in the past. And the issue is, if you do a bad job of designing your CBDC, nobody will use it. Why should they? If it isn't attractive to them, they've got their debit cards, they've got PayPal, they've got Alipay and M-Pesa. Why would they use it? It'll just fester and sit there doing precisely nothing. Now, as you and I have discussed in the past, there are very significant consumer benefits from a well-designed central bank digital cash, the ability for people who are financially excluded from bank accounts to send money to each other and exchange instantly with no fees, the fact that half of the population, in my humble opinion, doesn't need a bank account at all, and will be quite happy using digital cash held in little digital pockets, equivalent to the jam jars on mantelpieces back in 1946. The fact that people have bank accounts is partly because central bankers haven't given them digital cash for the digital age, and so they have to have a bank account. They don't need a bank account, but at the moment they're kind of stuck with one because they haven't been presented with a properly designed, attractive digital cash that they could be paid in, still with across Sage or, you know, a payroll software package. You can spit out the digital cash and deliver it to your WhatsApp account, just as it would be delivered through the brown envelope into the jam jar on the mantelpiece back in 1946. So this is a topic which is very important because it could transform significant elements of low value transaction life around the world. And if we think about the way employment is going, how many people are in the gig economy, are on national minimum wage or on first supervisor level above national minimum wage? So they're earning somewhere between 5,000 and 20,000 pounds in the UK, as an example, a year. Why would they need a bank account? Digital cash can do everything they need if it's properly designed. So the opportunity is vast to create for the first time in financial services a product that works for everyday people in their everyday lives inexpensively and quickly and directly, so that you can pick up your phone and send somebody £5 and 2 seconds later they receive £5 with no fees, right? That's cash. It's just like me handing you a £5 note and you receive a £5 note instantly. It's a bearer instrument. So these digital coins would be bearer instruments. The prize is massive. But the challenge is massive too, because having sat back and watched the market for electronic payments develop, you as a central banker are now the outsider. You were dominant, but you've let it go. You're now the outsider seeking to enter this market. And sounding sort of arrogant and pejorative about soap powders and that marketing is beneath you because you're a very important policy wonk is going to guarantee failure. You need to take a dose of humility and realize that this is an incredibly exciting but very challenging new product development, and get with the program that every other diligent professional product developer does, and do it properly.
But I would say I'm not being arrogant. I would say that the cash is central to the functioning of my economy. It's an expression of sovereignty. It is the means by which a sovereign government distinguishes itself, or one of the means, from the private sector. And for the vast majority of citizens, you and I can sit here and pontificate about M0 and M1 and central bank money and private sector money and so on and so forth. Most people, I think, don't make the differentiation between the piece of paper with a picture of Her Majesty on and the bits and bytes that happen when I use my bank card. Isn't there a tremendous educational job to be done here?
So I don't think so, because remember, we're not looking here to change the bits and bytes. I mean, I used to run the retail bank at NatWest. I love retail banking. I think it's a very important product. I think debit cards are great. I think interbank transfers are great. What we're talking about here is not a challenge to fiat money. Fiat money is absolutely as important as you say it is. What we're saying here is that for us in the kind of policy world of banking, we are talking about creating a third subdivision of M0. We're saying let's have metal coins and plastic these days, notes, and alongside them we'll have some digital coins. So we'll have a third subdivision of M0. M1, adding sight deposits to that, and M2, M3, M4, adding time deposits, et cetera, just unchanged, right? And the notion that fiat money is very important, unchanged. The role of the Bank of England as the banker's bank, unchanged. The role of the commercial banking sector in distributing the digital cash down to the individual consumer, unchanged. What we're doing, though, is we are introducing a new product which will sit alongside metal coins and plastic notes as a third form factor, if you like, for cash. And that is big because if you design it properly, you can make it mimic a number of the features of physical cash, including bearer, including free of transaction fees, and including an element of privacy. In a digital world, total privacy is never going to be there. And for good reasons, in a kind of AML, CFT sense, perhaps it shouldn't be there. But you can introduce an element of privacy, especially from commercial actors. So you can drop a digital coin onto a web page, and the charity that receives it, like dropping the coin into a bucket, has no clue where it's come from, but they've got the money. And why shouldn't we replicate that privacy? Why shouldn't we allow you to buy something without having to disclose to the financial institution that's mediating the transaction what you bought, when you bought it, and without disclosing to the person you're buying from who you are, right? When you go to a market and buy a bag of tomatoes, you don't have to give your name and address to the stallholder, but you do online effectively, and you tell the person who provided you with the cash that you've just been to the market and you bought the bag of tomatoes. It's ridiculous. We're in a position where we've allowed mega actors in the internet world and the financial services folks to believe that they have a right to eavesdrop on our every single transaction. They have geolocation. They know exactly where that market was, where we bought the tomatoes, if we tap and go with our debit card. That is outrageous. Now, there's not been much of a debate about it because people have enjoyed the novelty of being able to tap and go, and the pandemic makes tap and go hygienic and everybody's happy. But you could be just as hygienic with digital cash and tap and go digital cash without disclosing who you are, without there being a bank looking over your shoulder, and without that bank taxing the transaction. Because although you as a payer may pay nothing, I bet you the stallholder's paying, because there's a multi-trillion dollar industry behind the stallholder and acquisition for retail card or card equivalent payments. So this is a big topic. This needs to be done properly. The prize is a form of cash, a subdivision of M0 that can mimic for those cross society the fundamental features of physical cash. But there's more, Phil. There's more, because as the world becomes more digital, as the Internet of Things and as smart contracts start to pervade business to business life, wouldn't it be wonderful to be able to have digital cash in high denominations, in properly controlled private networks, able to be as a bearer instrument cascading through software suites, providing finality as a bearer instrument along the way with real-time FX? This, by the way, needs to be done to create interoperability. This needs to be done on a global basis, probably through the BIS. And so the BIS has to understand it is Orchestra leading a global new product development here, where the balance of, you know, what individual nation states want to do to make theirs the way they want it to be versus the need of interoperability, all that has to be talked through. But in the digital economy, I don't believe the digital economy will really arrive until we've got digital cash coursing through its veins. Far less clunky than having to arrange an interbank transfer every time you want to do a value transfer, which is ridiculous.
You talk about digital as complementary to physical cash, and indeed the ECB in its recent report has been at pains to stress that they're not advocating getting rid of physical notes and coin. Doesn't that rather miss the point? I mean, one of the reasons that proponents of digital cash have been arguing very strongly for decades is that cash is expensive. it's inefficient. And one of the big reasons, you know, you talked about Sweden and their e-krona experiment. One of the big reasons the Swedes are trying to move away from physical cash is just the sheer difficulties of distributing it in a vast country with very few people in it. And similarly, some of the island nations of the Pacific would love to get rid of cash, because moving even plastic notes around in across thousands of miles of ocean is not terribly convenient.
So, Phil, you're absolutely right. Cash is very expensive. Digital cash can complement physical cash, especially in distribution. If you imagine those islands, archipelagos you were talking about, whether they're in Greece or whether they're in Southeast Asia, you could digitally send and remit large amounts of cash and allow a limited amount of physical cash to go round and round and round locally. At the moment, because you've got the physical cash and you don't have a digital equivalent of it, you physically push the stuff out and pull the stuff back. You don't need to do that. You could have it, the physical stuff, remain local and have it, the bulk distributed and brought back digitally. And you don't need to decide in doing digital cash that you want to kill physical cash or you want to maintain physical cash. They can coexist for a good couple of decades. And so there doesn't have to be a debate about it's either or. Digital cash can complement physical cash. It can help with breaking down the costs of distributing it, which is very important. If you go back to Natalie Sini's work on, you know, exposing the cost overhead of the UK financial ATM network, right? So we're not going to be far now before those costs are going to be exposed, because people are using cash less and they're taking less cash out of cash dispensers, and the economics of the cash dispenser network are being challenged. But digital cash can help there. So it can work in tandem with physical cash over the first couple of decades of its life, and then probably in the end, physical cash will fade away. But you don't need to have that debate in launching digital cash. Digital cash has to stand on its own two feet as a product, and if to the extent it can help in the distribution economics of physical cash, it should be encouraged to do that too.
So I'm sitting here in my central bank, convinced me that I need to introduce this new product because my old product is getting a bit long in the tooth, to a consumer who probably doesn't really understand it. What should I be doing?
You should be going out and talking to consumers and asking them what they want. Not telling them anything, asking them what they want. But as any good marketeer will tell you, you have to put a value proposition in front of the consumer. You can't just go in and say, hello, I'm a central banker, what do you want? And so the art here is presenting a customer value proposition into a qualitative research event, seeing what reaction you get, and then iterating, working with the consumers. And remember, different sorts of consumers, as I said, old ones, young ones, small businesses, et cetera, to find out what people want. Now, as I have developed my little digital cash things, whether it's Mondex or Tibado, I've tried them out on various people, taxi drivers, window cleaners, small builders. They all love it. The reason they don't know about it is that nobody talks to them about it, Phil, right? They haven't been presented with digital cash. The received wisdom is the cash is notes and coin. That's it. Everything else is banking things and PayPal. If you don't talk to consumers about a product, how do you expect them to know about it? But if you go to somebody and say, yeah, you haven't got a bank account, but look, with digital cash, you could go online to the Argos website, buy something, and then queue up in the posh I've already paid line with your four-digit number to receive the goods, just like those posh people with the bank accounts. Isn't that cool? And if you work as a builder in Dubai and you want to send money home to Bangladesh, you can do it in 5 seconds with no fees. And there might be an FX fee, but that FX would be online, and that FX spread could be, what, an eighth of a percent, not 7%? Isn't that cool? Or you might want to be a cruise ship worker, again, sending money home to the Philippines. So this will revolutionize the remittances market, and that's very exciting. You know, the prize here is huge. But the way into it is to go and present digital cash propositions to the various users that you have, I'm afraid, as a central banker, failed over the past 20 or 30 years. With Mondex in the 1990s, we made it crystal clear what the opportunity was here. And what's happened since? Absolutely nothing, right? And so there's work to do here to realize that as a central banker, it's your duty to present the fiat currency in a usable retail form and you are failing in that duty because metal coins and paper notes, plastic notes, are just yesterday, right? They are not the digital economy. Where is your digital economy representation of fiat money, independent of a bank account, just bearer instrument for the citizen and the business to use in the digital economy? It isn't there. It needs to be there. Get out and start talking to the citizens of the country and see what they want with the digital products you can design for them.
You talk about a revolution clearly in the financial infrastructure of our economies and our worlds. You talked eloquently, I think, about remittances and payments. Given that it's certain countries, about half of the profitability of the banking system comes out of payments, particularly when you're in a zero interest rate environment. Are you not going to destroy your banking industry, or at least change it extraordinarily radically, if you're suddenly introducing this central bank guaranteed digital instrument, which is cheap and easy to use and doesn't have fractional reserve capability?
Yeah. So the facetious answer would be to say, you know, I'm in floods of tears here, Phil. You know, I mean, bankers clearly have a divine right to exist and a divine right to inhabit those parts of GDP that they inhabit. And woe betide it be me that takes their BMW 5 Series and their trip to the golf club away from them. The more serious answer is that in a proper digital economy, the possible products that facilitate and lubricate that digital economy need to be introduced and need to find their place. The don't scare the bankers answer is this is still going to take a couple of decades, right? This is not going to be quick. The response cycle will, I believe, be well beyond the reinvestment cycle in assets for the banking community, i.e. they will be able to respond by making appropriate investments and changing things in good time, because this will take 5, 10, 15, 20 years to come in, to settle down and to mature. So there's nothing to be scared of here. There may be significant change in the end. There could be some areas like remittances where if central bankers worked together to take on some of the bigger remittance corridors, for example, if the US and the Mexican authorities got together to put up a CBDC for that, the single biggest remittance corridor in the world, yes, that would damage Western Union. Get over it, right? Consumers deserve the best products they can get. That's our job in society, is to provide consumers with the best products and businesses they can get. And private sector actors that made lots of money from previous generations have to move over. That's the way of capitalism. I am an unreconstructed capitalist, and we have to move on now to more efficient forms of value transfer where we can as the digital economy proceeds.
Well, thank you, Tim. Nothing less than a full-scale transformation of the economy and the way we pay each other. But a clear lesson here that techniques from consumer marketing need to be learned and deployed by the central banking community. So insightful. There's more to go on this, a lot more to go, and hopefully we shall continue the conversation. But for the moment, Tim Jones, thank you very much indeed for your insights.
Thanks very much, and thanks again for the opportunity.